Picture Genetics is a unique DNA testing service with tests designed for every stage of life, including family planning. With a Picture Parenting Carrier Test, you can uncover genetic conditions that may be passed on to your kids, such as cystic fibrosis, which we're going to be exploring in this brand new series on DNA Today. Unlike other companies, this is actually a clinical-grade test where physicians and genetic counselors are involved. It's easy to order and understand with good-looking reports. To order your Picture Genetics test, go to picturegenetics.com and use code DNATODAY for 25% off and free shipping. Get actionable genetic insights today to benefit your family of tomorrow.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening or watching DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. I'm also a certified genetic counselor practicing in the prenatal space. On this show, we explore genetics' impact on our health through conversations with leaders in genetics. These are experts like genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, and patient advocates. In this episode, we're continuing our cystic fibrosis series, and I'm joined by Gunnar Esiason. He is a cystic fibrosis and rare disease patient leader, serving as the director of patient outreach at the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Thank you so much, Gunnar, for coming on the show.
Yeah, hey, Kira. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for spotlighting cystic fibrosis over the past couple episodes.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you just share your experience with cystic fibrosis, the patient advocacy that you're a part of. Before we jump into all that, for people that maybe are jumping into this series and don't have a background on cystic fibrosis, what is your elevator pitch when someone says, well, what is cystic fibrosis? How can you educate our listeners?
Yeah, well, I usually start by saying cystic fibrosis is pretty complex. It is a recessive genetic disorder that is most generally associated with respiratory decline or airway disease. But the truth is cystic fibrosis affects just about every single organ in my body. And really what the problem is that thick, sticky mucus builds up not only in my lungs, but also my pancreas and a few other organs. But the real trouble is in the lungs. It's, you know, classic respiratory disease. And that thick, sticky mucus is a perfect medium for infectious bacteria to take hold and create any number of issues for people with CF. So right now we see that the median age of death for people with CF is early 30s. We do expect that number will increase as we've had a number of pretty significant therapeutic breakthroughs over the past few years, which I think we'll talk about in a few minutes. But things are looking pretty good right now for the cystic fibrosis community. Things are on the up and up, and what I've long said is that it's probably one of the most significant modern medical miracles, only to be surpassed by the vaccine development over the past year. So we had our moment in the sun there, but I'm certainly happy to yield that spotlight to the public health successes that we're starting to see here.
Yeah, and the other episodes in this series, we've talked about just how many firsts in medicine have come from cystic fibrosis. And I really didn't understand all the depth of it until we started this series on the show. So it's just, you know, really exciting to see all the developments. And, you know, as you said, that the life expectancy is just getting so much longer for people that have cystic fibrosis. Where did your journey with CF begin? I mean, when were you diagnosed?
So I was actually diagnosed with cystic fibrosis when I was 2 years old. I actually received a negative misdiagnosis right after birth. So my parents went about 2 years before they had any answers on a concrete diagnosis. But the fact of the matter is I was diagnosed when I was two. We were living in northern Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati at the time. My dad was actually the starting quarterback of just been traded to the New York Jets, so we were about to move to New York. But back then, my dad decided to use his platform in the NFL to sort of put a face on cystic fibrosis. We ended up on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and right around then, my parents founded the Boomer Esiason Foundation, which since then has raised close to $200 million in the fight against cystic fibrosis. And a lot of our financial efforts have gone towards drug development in parallel to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, but also clinical improvements. We've supported a number of cystic fibrosis clinics across the country. And then we, of course, support basic research, whether that's looking at antimicrobial resistance or mental health or the GI side of cystic fibrosis, and then, of course, lung transplant. And then we also provide financial grants to patients. So we support patients with college scholarships or higher education scholarships, rather, We support patients who are going through hard times because of a natural disaster. We have a disaster relief program. And then most recently, we've actually also instituted a coronavirus economic relief program for folks who have fallen on hard times because of the pandemic. So we feel like we're touching a lot of patients in the here and now. We want to make sure that they're financially stable and successful and have the opportunities to do really whatever they want to do later in life, because we know that later in life will happen now, thanks to a lot of the breakthroughs that we've had.
Yeah, and it's fantastic that just, you know, with your diagnosis when you're around two, that's when, sounds like, the Boomer Esiason Foundation was started, that your dad was really starting that. How has your involvement changed over the years with this? Obviously, when you were two, you weren't as, you know, involved at that point, other than being on the cover of magazines, certainly.
This is true, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think when I was a little kid, my parents took the active approach of sort of, you know, just using me as, you know, I don't want to say a prop because that's the wrong word, but they used me to sort of put a face on cystic fibrosis and what it looks like, you know, here in the United States in the 90s. But the truth is, I lived a pretty typical childhood. You know, went to high school, played sports, you know, did the whole thing. Only after I graduated from college have I taken more of an operational role besides, you know, the fundraising that I had done my entire life. And that's taken the shape of a number of different things, whether it's advocacy efforts, you know, working with other patient groups, patient organizations, or individual patients. And of course, you know, our policymakers, our partners, you know, on the drug development side, our partners on, you know, of course, the payer side, and then really all stakeholders within, like, you know, the healthcare ecosystem that has been sort of a part of and tangential to the whole cystic fibrosis world, and then more recently within the broader rare disease community. So in the United States, rare disease is any disease that has a current incidence of less than 200,000 patients at any one time living with the condition. And really what we do with the rare disease, you know, sort of mantra is that it gives us policy power, right? So because we're dealing with such small patient populations, when we're able to band together, it gives us more of a footprint in the broader healthcare world, which is always kind of fighting for any number of resources.
And when it comes to your care team, who is involved in that? I mean, is this what most patients experience? Are you a little bit different?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the care team is certainly multidisciplinary, but it's run by a pulmonologist, right? So the pulmonologist is generally, you know, the person at the quarterback of the cystic fibrosis care team, if you will. And that person is really running the entire clinic visit from, you know, looking at different medical issues and also referring to other team members. And because cystic fibrosis is a multi-organ disorder, you know, we're also dealing with, you know, gastroenterologists, we're dealing with mental health providers, and of course we're dealing with any number of people on the team. So I can just go through and list them off. So it's the pulmonologist, it's the social worker who helps with insurance coverage and things like that, as well as, you know, tangentially to mental health issues. We have generally there's a nurse practitioner in the room who sort of coordinates the care. There's respiratory therapists, there's a physical therapist, there's, you know, a nutritionist. So there's any number of roles that are sort of, you know, seeing the patient on any given visit. And then we can, of course, be referred out to other specialists in the hospital who have experience with cystic fibrosis. And then, of course, something that, you know, a lot more people will see if are going to sort of go through is, of course, fertility issues. So part of living with cystic fibrosis is male infertility. Something like 96 or 97% of men living with cystic fibrosis do have infertility because of the congenital absence of the vas deferens. And what that really means is, you know, men with CF, if they want to father children, have to go through in vitro fertilization. So more and more frequently, we're seeing men also, you know, solicit those services too.
So there certainly is a lot of people that are involved with care, and that does change over the course of someone's life. Obviously, for fertility treatments, that's going to be more in the adult years. How does your treatment look like on, like, a daily basis, weekly basis? What does that schedule look like for you? How does it impact, you know, your schedule?
So I've always said that care for cystic fibrosis is active and arduous. So you're just constantly caring for the condition, especially because it's a respiratory disease. You know, simply because it's progressive and it does get worse, you really just kind of have to hold it together to sort of, you know, prolong, you know, the good, healthy years. So what it generally looks like is about 2 hours all in, about an hour in the morning and then an hour in the evening. It's, you know, a mixture of nebulizing steroids and mucolytics and antibiotics and a number of different treatments, first right after you wake up and then again before you go to bed. But the thing that everyone seems to remember about CF care is this big vest that we strap on. It sort of shakes our chests, and what it does is it actually loosens up the mucus in our airways so that we can just cough it right out. It all comes back to trying to treat that mucus, that thick, sticky mucus, to the point where, we always say better out than in. So the goal is to just dislodge that mucus and get it up and get it out. But then, of course, CF can actually progress to the point where we do have pulmonary exacerbations, which are essentially when the bacteria living in our airways sort of flares and makes things a lot worse. And what that really looks like is, the classic high fever, deep watery cough, a lot of mucus production, fatigue. It's not exactly too fun. And my life was unfortunately sort of riddled with those issues right when I graduated from college. My health was rapidly deteriorating to the point where I was, for all intents and purposes, looking at end-stage illness by the time I was 22, 23 years old. And, at that point, you really just kind of pull out all the stops to try and figure out what's going on, how to attack the issue, and, of course, prolong life. So, I was, over the course of 5 years from, 2013 to 2018 or so, I remember I went through, 24 medical procedures, whether it was, IV antibiotic therapy, bronchoscopies, any number of different sort of treatment options that we can sort of deal with or throw at these issues that I was having. And then, of course, Trikafta. So Trikafta is the cystic fibrosis CFTR modulator that goes in and corrects the protein dysfunction at the heart of CF. And I mean, it changed my life overnight. I was in the phase 3 clinical trial that, looked to look at the efficacy and safety of Trikafta. And after about a day and a half, I knew I didn't have a placebo because I woke up. Wow. And next thing you know, I could breathe.
So it was that powerful, just like overnight, that you really felt the effects from you said Trikafta?
Yes, it's called Trikafta. The truth of the matter is, I dosed it, for all intents and purposes on a Monday afternoon. By Wednesday, I was breathing better. I went in for my next, my clinic, my study visit about a week and a half later, and my pulmonary function tests, which generally go down over the course of a patient's life, went up for the first time. And since then, my treatment burden has decreased substantially. I think I've only had to deal with one pulmonary exacerbation, maybe two, since 2018, now 2021, which is a pretty significant thing. So I went from 24 pulmonary exacerbations or pulmonary events over a course of 5 years. It's now been 3 years, and I've only gone through one or two. I mean, that's a pretty substantial thing.
Wow.
And it's allowed me to go to grad school. I'm actually just finishing up my MBA at Dartmouth. I'll finish my MPH next year, and it's sort of given me my life back. It's also given me the ability to sort of reinvent myself, is what I keep saying. I no longer have to think about being in survival mode just because I have this thing to fall back on, this such amazingly powerful drug.
Yeah, definitely. And so for that drug, do you know what types of mutations people can have that take the drug that it works for?
Right. So Trikafta is approved for about 90% of the cystic fibrosis population. So, about 90% of the population has at least one copy of the Delta F508 mutation, which is the most common one. So I do have a Delta F508 mutation, and I have a rare mutation as my second one. So I'm a heterozygote, but it does work for me. It works for my combination. And, my story is not alone here. People who are taking Trikafta are getting their life back, almost overnight, somewhere to the way I did. And what it really is showing is it's showing the power of, the nonprofits at the middle of this, the Boomer Science Foundation, the Emily Entourages, the Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, and the Cystic Fibrosis Foundations, of course, who, have worked at these things for years and years and years and are finally bringing results to the table. And then, of course, the biopharmaceutical industry, the researchers, the doctors, everyone involved has played such a huge role in developing this medical miracle.
Yeah, it's so powerful to see how many people with CF can take the drug and that, there's so many different drugs being developed for that other like 5-10% that wouldn't be included in that drug and other similar drugs to it. We have an episode that focuses on that in the series as well. Scoping out a little bit, I know you have a blog series that features patient advocates from other countries called Cystic Fibrosis Around the World. So you've interviewed people from Morocco and Turkey. What have you learned in terms of how cystic fibrosis is different in other countries? We focus on the U.S. a lot in the show because it's a U.S.-based mm-hmm. podcast. But what have you learned, you know, more international CF community?
I mean, the truth is there's a lot of variability in the way patients are living with cystic fibrosis. And it's especially true in quote unquote underdeveloped countries or countries that may not have the same kind of medical infrastructure that you have here in the U.S. or in Canada or United Kingdom. And the truth is, you know, talking to a lot of these patients, it's very, very sad to hear what they go through. And it's simply just because either their government isn't recognizing cystic fibrosis as a priority, or the hospital infrastructure just isn't there to support people with cystic fibrosis in such a multidisciplinary or intensive way as we are here. You know, I certainly think we're absolutely fortunate with the way the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation has set up the clinical care network here in the United States, because the truth is you could go from one care center to the next and there would be very little disruption in care. You know, the way the clinical care guidelines are here in the U.S. are such that, care from one place to the next is very, very similar. Of course, the one thing we deal with here in the U.S. is high out-of-pocket costs for people who, are either dealing with, one type of insurance over another, and that's, of course, a whole other conversation. But I think the thing that I've taken away from that Cystic Fibrosis Around the World series is that so many different people are dealing with cystic fibrosis that I do think that the condition is far more prevalent than people sort of think. You know, I remember talking to one person with CF in Russia, and she basically went as far to say that, we've identified that there's at least 10,000 people living with CF in the country, but Russia's a big place. And guess what? You know, we're definitely not finding all of them. So the truth is there's a lot of work that needs to be done on an international level for cystic fibrosis patients. And the success that we're having here in the United States and, of course, other countries that are sort of starting to get access to Trikafta and other modulator therapies. But there's a long way to go to find those people who are just not benefiting quite yet.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And just that, the U.S. seems to be a leader in cystic fibrosis and really trailblazing the way, especially for these treatments and medications, and that other countries certainly benefit from that. But just the healthcare system and the way that it's set up and just the cystic fibrosis like communities there and organizations are probably not as active as, it is in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think the simple fact of the matter is the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation needs to be recognized for what it's done for the biomedical community at large. It's a nonprofit, but at the same time, it's also a financial institution, right? It invests in drug developers and biomedical researchers, right? The venture philanthropy that Cystic Fibrosis Foundation uses is so unique and so powerful that it's able to deliver these breakthrough drugs. They're not just writing checks to researchers and hoping that biotechs or pharmaceutical companies come and pick up the research on their own will. The CF Foundation is actually going out and finding partners and says, here, we'll give you this money, go and find us something. And it works. It works very, very well. And the thing that I've sort of seen is that, that is kind of missing from the international scope. The Cystic Fibrosis Foundation is such a big, giant player and has so much success. And, I'm hopeful that, not only for CF, but for other rare diseases especially, there can be some sort of, mirror image for their organizations that are representing patient populations that still have unmet medical needs.
Yeah, I think they're a fantastic example of how you can be so successful, as you were saying, of taking, okay, we've raised this money, let's invest it in this drug. Now we're going to take all of the money we're making from that drug to invest into the next one. And we really explore that in the first episode of this series of just how impressive it is of just what they were able to do and just, record setting in terms of a foundation able to, have that cycle going. So we've, discussed the treatments and, the money behind fundraising. How has COVID-19 impacted your life? I mean, CF is a respiratory disorder, so is COVID-19. I mean, I'm sure that the CF community has really been impacted by this. Obviously, now we're having much more people be vaccinated, but how has this last year been for you?
Yeah, it's been tough. I will not lie. But I also have to say that, I'm incredibly fortunate to be where I am in life right now. I live in rural New Hampshire. I am in grad school, so of all places to be during this, I couldn't think of a better place. simply because, you know, we live in a small town and we have a very comprehensive surveillance program. You know, every student, every faculty member, every staffer at Dartmouth gets tested. The other big employer in the area is a medical center. So, you know, we know where the disease is. We know the level of disease in individual communities, and that allows me to make really good decisions about what I want to do with a certain degree of confidence. You know, I think for a lot of people with CF, it's been tough, right? There's been a lot of hard trade-offs that people have had to make between, you know, either health and work or, do I send my kid to school? Do I send my kid to school? There's a lot of different issues that people with CF are dealing with, simply because we do know that people with CF are at somewhat of a higher risk for severe disease from the coronavirus. And you can see that in the number of people with CF who have developed COVID-19 here in the United States or over in Europe based on registry data. And of course, there is some variability there, but a lot of what we've had to do over the last year is really fight for our representation in front of policymakers. And early on in the pandemic, that meant making sure that people with CF and other disabilities had their, you know, equal say at healthcare and away from rationing, because, you know, I think we are all confronted with medical rationing for the first time in our lives, which was a very difficult thing for people to sort of reckon with. And that was back when, you know, I think everyone sort of thought that every single hospital in the United States was going to be overwhelmed. Thank God that didn't happen. But then, of course, more recently, it was all about vaccine equity and making sure people with CF are in that first wave of folks who are eligible for vaccines. And the truth was that most states did not prioritize people with CF. And, you know, of course, you can say, you know, it's some states did it right, some states did it better than others. But the truth is most people with CF are, you know, at least vaccinated now, or we're starting to get vaccinated, you know, early on in the spring, late winter. So I feel like we have had some success there. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was definitely a little bit of a punch to the gut for the pandemic to come on. You know, I think a lot of people with CF were feeling real good for the first time in their lives. You know, Trikafta was approved at the end of 2019. Then, of course, the pandemic set in. And that, you know, disrupts everything. It disrupts everything from clinical trials to fundraising to drug development to really every single part of that. You know, every single thing that made the cystic fibrosis community so successful for so long was just immediately disrupted. And the one thing I will say about living with CF is people with CF are, you know, infection control experts from a very early age. So if there's anything that we had going for us leading into the pandemic, it was that. You know, we know how to sterilize things. We know how to stay safe. And I do think that the behavior of living with cystic fibrosis mitigated a lot of the exposure risk that patients probably could have felt in any other condition.
That you're just so used to limiting exposure to viruses and just preventing yourself from being exposed to bacteria and different things that you were already kind of in the mindset the rest of the world had to catch up with, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of a crude joke, but I remember sort of talking to my dad earlier in the pandemic, and I was like, wow, this is like our Super Bowl here. Like, you know, we're finally putting all these skills to the test, sort of mitigating risk to different infectious pathogens. And I do think that, we are fortunate in the CF world to have been trained from such an early age about how to do that it finally paid off when it really counted.
Yeah, definitely. And just with COVID-19, I think, you know, everybody's been impacted with their social life and relationships. Prior to the pandemic, how do you connect with people? We've been talking about the cystic fibrosis community. How does this work in terms of, you know, meeting up in person with people with CF? Mm-hmm. Is there rules around this? How does that work?
Yeah, so yeah, we've always kind of said that people with CF have been social distancing from each other for a long time. And the truth is, yeah, CF is a condition that leads to a number of different diseases in the body. But the one that is on top of mind is the antimicrobial resistance that sort of lives in our lungs. And because of that, two patients can actually swap an infection with each other. It's a very, you know, sort of fluid and sticky situation, excuse the pun, but that's the truth of the matter. So what it comes down to is we've lived by the 6-foot rule for all, you know, for most of our lives. To the point where, you know, when you go to a cystic fibrosis clinic, you know, you're kept away from other patients. You know, you don't sit in the waiting room. You're ushered right into a hospital room, that kind of thing. Because these infectious bacteria can create such significant problems for people with CF. You know, and despite the benefits of these modulator therapies that we've had, the most significant unmet need across the entire population, of course, that last 10% does need a disease-modifying drug. But the single unmet need that persists across the entire patient population is, you know, the failure of our antibiotics, right? The antibiotics are getting weaker. And you if you want a window into, you know, what a post-antibiotic world looks like, you know, just talk to someone with cystic fibrosis. But because of that, patients can't communicate face-to-face, and we're sort of discouraged from communicating face-to-face. So there's a very rich and robust online community that, you know, people with CF have been able to use and sort of connect with each other, you know, with the advent of social media and, of course, you know, internet platforms, which, you know, creates its own sort of problems and issues. But that's really where the cystic fibrosis community has come together, is in these online places.
Another kind of way that the cystic fibrosis community was ahead of COVID, of just, you know, looking at those online communities of being such a source of, you know, socializing and developing relationships. How has CF impacted your personal relationships and friendships and romantic relationships, and just with your family?
You know, I think I'm fortunate in so far that I've had like a great support system. My parents raised me from a very early age to sort of show my cystic fibrosis to my classmates and their families and stuff like that. You know, I remember having play dates when I was a little kid, and whenever I had a friend over, my parents would just throw on my treatments and throw on my vest. And that was the way they got to show what cystic fibrosis was to my friends. And they could, you know, be like, you know, this is what Gunnar has to deal with. Can you be there for him? You know, that kind of thing. And it went a long way to the point where I felt very comfortable doing my treatments in public and sharing my cystic fibrosis with friends and family members. And that sort of persisted all the way through college, to the point where, you know, the very first day of school, I did my undergrad at Boston College, and I'll never forget that the first night of school, my college roommate was one of my buddies from high school, but we had like seven or eight kids inside our room. You know, for whatever reason, our room just ended up being like the room that everyone hung out in the first night. And there were seven or eight of us in the room kind of just sitting there in a circle. Next thing you know, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to do my treatments. I just want to throw them on and get this over with, because I felt like I had this giant secret lingering behind me. And of course, as soon as I pulled out a nebulizer, one of my buddies, who, you know, now a very good friend of mine, was like, okay, are you going to pass that or what? thinking my nebulizer was a joint. And of course, that's not what it was. And I had to, of course, go through the whole, you know, the whole, the long and short of, you know, seeing what cystic fibrosis was, what the nebulizer was. And the truth is, you know, seven or eight out of those eight or nine guys are still my best friends today. And a lot of them have, you know, gone on to raise money for Boomer Stars and Foundation and taken a very active role in my life. So for me, it's been a great strategy to share my cystic fibrosis with other people. And I did the same thing here at business school. You know, I got up there one of the first 2 weeks of school and was able to talk about what cystic fibrosis was, how it led me to where I am today, and this, that, and the other thing. And a lot of my friends here now at business school have really gone out of their way to make sure that I'm comfortable during the coronavirus pandemic, especially back in the beginning when, you know, I was pre-vaccine and really had to, you know, keep the walls up. So it's definitely been part of my life to share my CF, and I, of course, share that advice with younger patients, you know, to be comfortable with your CF and to be comfortable sharing it. Because at the end of the day, you know, building a team is what leads to some success with CF.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and just so exciting to see that there is such a community behind cystic fibrosis. I think that, you know, when it comes to rare diseases, it can be really difficult for conditions that don't have a specific community. Obviously, as we've been talking about, there's the rare disease community overall, but really just having that active community there. And just, you know, want to thank you on behalf of like genetic counselors and, you know, other people, healthcare providers and people that are learning about cystic fibrosis, for being someone that's, you know, as you said, kind of a poster child since you were two with cystic fibrosis, and just, you know, staying active with becoming an advocate and how that's changed over the years. So thank you so much for just coming on and sharing, you know, your life and your experience and just all the knowledge you have about cystic fibrosis. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, no, of course. And thank you so much for having me. And I do think that there's a lot to be learned out of the cystic fibrosis experience, what it means to really have some giant, you know, ginormous success when you're dealing with what was once considered a childhood disease. And to me, the thing that I'm most proud of with our advances in cystic fibrosis is that every year the adult patient population grows to be bigger and bigger and bigger than the pediatric population. Not that I don't care about our CF kids, but I think just because CF has been long known as a childhood disease, it's not that anymore. It's becoming a lifelong chronic condition. But that's, to me, in my mind, that's far better than the term childhood disease.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see all of the improvements. And I also wanted to give a plug. You're a podcaster as well. You had a show for a few years called Breathe In, and you have a new podcast that just dropped called The State of Health. Can you give people a little teaser about that?
Yeah, so The State of Health was really my idea was to show what it's like to be a patient advocate and what we do and who we talk with. So, you know, one of our first episodes, we had Governor Murphy from New Jersey on the podcast talking about people with rare disease in his state and some of the infrastructure his administration has put towards not only people with cystic fibrosis, but also rare disease, especially during the coronavirus. And then we're going to go on and talk with, thought leaders in the world. And as I always like to say, it's great to see someone who's, a healthcare leader talk in front of a big giant room. It's another thing entirely to have them answer to a patient. And that's what we're trying to do with The State of Health. We want to show the world what kind of power there is when you engage stakeholders and what kind of power patients should have inside the larger healthcare ecosystem.
Oh, that is awesome. I'm going to have to check out the show. And for people that want to do the same, you can search The State of Health on your podcast app or go to dnapodcast.com. We're going to link to that in the show notes. You can also search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and connect with us there. Any questions for myself or Gunnar, you can send it to info@dnapodcast.com. We are happy to answer whatever's on your mind. And a quick favor, if you guys could rate and review on Apple Podcasts, that would be incredibly helpful so that other people can learn about the show and we can grow. So thank you again, Gunnar, for coming on the show. It was just fantastic to have you.
Yeah, Kira, I'm happy to do it.
Before ending the show, I want to remind you about Picture Genetics with their exclusive 25% discount for you as a DNA Today listener. Picture Genetics is different from a traditional direct consumer test because it's clinical grade testing with every case reviewed by a healthcare provider. Results are focused on health with medically actionable and useful information for you and your family. I did a couple of their kits, including their picture parenting one. Here's how it worked. I sent off a tube of my spit to the lab, who sequenced a bunch of genes, including CFTR, which you now know is the cystic fibrosis gene. This means they read through each gene to see if there was a mutation or pathogenic variants, as we genetic counselors call them. Then a geneticist looked at my results and created a beautifully easy-to-read report, informing me about my carrier results. And here's my favorite part. There is also genetic counseling offered, so you speak with a genetic counselor about your results. Order your own kit at picturegenetics.com and use code DNATODAY for 25% off and free shipping. Again, that's picturegenetics.com. Get actionable genetic insights today to benefit your family of tomorrow. And thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, they're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.